Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and on the other end of the line is my mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Hello, everyone. Beautiful day here. I hope it is where you are.
So we're in Iowa. Some of you may realize that. And RAGBRAI, the Register's Annual Great Bike Ride Across Iowa, is happening this week. And my sister-in-law, Mom's daughter-in-law, rides on RAGBRAI. So she and 20-some of her friends were at my house last night because Fairfield was one of the stops. They were very well-behaved.
Well, they had a nice place, had a nice big basement to sleep in.
They were very grateful to be indoors, not having to pack up tents. And it rained during the night, so they were especially happy not to have to pack up a wet tent.
Yeah, I'll bet. Okay, good.
So that was a lot of fun. So this week, we are talking to a children's author, Rajani LaRocca. She was born in India, raised in Kentucky, and now lives in the Boston area with her wonderful family and very, very cute dog. She earned a BA and an MD from Harvard and spends her time writing novels and picture books, practicing medicine, and baking lots of sweet treats.
I'll bet.
Midsummer's Mayhem is her first novel, and you can find Rajani LaRocca online at RajaniLaRocca.com and on Twitter and Instagram as well. So you can look for her there. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Rajani.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
And am I saying your name right?
Yes, it's close. It's Rajani.
Rajani.
Yes.
Oh, and you
yes.
told me that and I still got it wrong. Okay, Rajani.
No worries.
Now, that, I'm guessing, is an Indian name.
It is.
But LaRocca sounds like perhaps not.
That's an Italian name. That's my husband's last name. It's a good combination.
Yeah,
I'll say.
And is that the same combination in your novel, or is... Are both the parents Indian in the novel?
In the novel, the mom is Indian, like me, mm-hmm. and the dad is not Indian. The dad is not Italian either in the novel, but
okay.
We'll forgive him that.
We will, yes. But he loves food like Italians.
He does. He definitely
does.
Everyone in the novel loves food.
Yes. So I'm guessing that food and cooking and baking must be one of your first loves.
Yes, I mean, I've always loved food. I didn't come to baking until later in my life. When I was a kid, I mainly just, if I baked, it was from a mix because, you know, my mom really didn't know that much about baking. But then, actually, when I was in medical school, I had a roommate who was quite a baker. And she, you know, I was all intimidated. And she said, you just need to have this stuff around. So we became roommates. And we got all... We had all the stuff, and then we, baked up a store in medical school. And then, you know, after that, I kind of caught the baking bug. And so I've baked a lot through the years and got to experiment more and more. And I had a lot of fun coming up kind of with the food ideas for this book.
The main character in the book, Mimi, is – how old is Mimi?
She's 11.
She's 11, and she mm-hmm. loves to bake. And, you know, I learned to bake from my mother. But I have mm-hmm. I have a little baking story because my mom, you mostly baked from scratch when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly cookies, right, Mom?
Right.
And most things that you made, pies and everything, were from scratch. And after I left home, I was baking and I was trying to bake brownies, and I loved the way my mom's brownies tasted. I had never baked them at home, obviously, or the story wouldn't mm-hmm. make any sense. And and I had tried these different recipes, and none of them all came out quite what I expected. And so I called Mom, and I said, would you please give me your brownie recipe? And she said, open the box.
Oh, my goodness, that's just great.
So it turns out that I think it was Betty Crocker's brownie mix beat all the recipes that I had found up to that point.
It is. I mean, that mix is pretty foolproof, I will say.
Yeah,
and in a pinch, like, why not? Oh my goodness, that's fantastic! I love it.
So, Reggie,
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. Oh, do you remember it now?
No, I do, but I
So, Reginae, tell us a little bit about what types of writing you did before this, before Midsummer's Mayhem.
Yeah, so I was one of those kids that was really obsessed with books since, you know, as far back as I can remember. I read pretty early, and I always had a book in my hand, like on the school bus, you know, during reading time at school, at the dinner table, you know, pretty much at the breakfast table, kind of all the time. And my parents really, you know, they allowed me to do that, and they allowed me to read pretty much anything I wanted. So I read a lot of novels, of course, but I also read nonfiction, and I read comic books, and I read cereal boxes, and kind of whatever I could get my hands on. And I did a lot of creative writing in school, you know, elementary school, middle school, and high school, but I also knew that I wanted to be a doctor. So I remember in high school, I had a creative writing teacher, and I said to him, you know, I really love this, but I don't think this is what I'm going to do for my career. I really want to go into medicine. And he said to me, and I'll never forget it, he said, you know, you don't have to choose. He said, there are lots of writers that lots of doctors who are also writers. And he told me about Richard Seltzer and William Carlos Williams and Oliver Wendell Holmes and gave me some books to read. And so that kind of was, you know, planted as a seed in the back of my head. And then I went to college. I did some more creative writing. I did, you know, I wrote some plays. I wrote some personal essays. And then, you know, I went to medical school and residency, and that was kind of the end of creative writing for a while because I just had to stuff my brain too full of other things. Then I had children. I mean, lots of people write with children, it seems like, in their, you know, with small children in their house, but I couldn't imagine how I would do that. So it wasn't until a few years ago when my kids were in school and my medical practice was established that I kind of, you know, went back to, well, what am I going to do creatively that's just for me? Because up until then, you know, my biggest form of creativity was, you know, making meals, baking things, and planning birthday parties for my kids. So I took some classes online. I decided to do some writing, and I took some classes online, and it quickly became apparent that I wanted to write for kids. And then I met some wonderful writers in person at classes, and then we formed critique groups, and then that started it. Once you have people who are expecting you to show up once a month with something, you know, something written or something revised, then you kind of keep going at it. And then a few years ago, I decided to actively pursue publication, and by that time, I had written this novel and five picture books that I thought were in the right shape, that, you know,
wow,
they had a chance of being published. Yeah.
And are all the picture books being published also, or have they been?
I have five picture books that are slated to be published between 2020 and 2022.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been an exciting time.
Whoa. So can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yes, well, I can tell you, so publishing is funny because even though you have, you know, you've got deals made that you're going to be published, sometimes you can't announce them until lots of other things fall into place, like the illustrator is chosen and all that stuff. So I can tell you about the three picture books that that have been announced publicly. So the first one is coming out in 2020, and it's with Lee and Lowe Books, and it's called Seven Golden Rings, and it's a picture book that reads like a folktale from ancient India, but it also introduces the concept of binary numbers to young readers. So it's kind of fun. There's like a little math puzzle in the center of this picture book. it's fun. I enjoyed it, and you know, you can read it without needing to know anything about math or anything, and you don't have to kind of read the author's note that explains the binary numbers, but it is kind of fun. And then I've got two coming in 2022. One is called I'll Go and Come Back, and it is going to be published with Candlewick. And it is a story about a girl and her grandmother, and it's about an Indian girl who travels to India to, you know, visit her relatives and is lonely and homesick, and her grandmother helps her through playing with her and through food, which is a theme in all of my books, as you'll see. And then the grandmother comes to visit the girl in the U.S., and she's lonely and homesick, and the girl helps her. I'm excited about that one. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm excited about all of them, but that one is really close to my heart, and it is inspired by my relationship with my grandmother. And then there's another one in 2022 coming from Abrams, and it's called Where Three Oceans Meet, and it is the story of a girl who takes a journey in India to the very tip of the subcontinent, to the place where they say three oceans meet, and it's the Indian Ocean, the Bay of Bengal, and the Arabian Sea all meet there, and they say that you can see three different colors of water, and I've been there, and I think I did see three different colors of water, so I don't know whether that's an optical illusion or not, but it's pretty amazing, and it's about kind of immigration and missing your family and the strength and love that mothers pass on to their daughters.
Wow. That sounds really, really interesting.
And picture books, they're geared towards up to age 8, something like that?
Yes. Yes, although I've heard of teachers using picture books for older kids as well, because they're so kind of bite-sized and easy to discuss in a classroom setting. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we say they're for younger readers, but of course they're also for their parents, right, who have to read them to them. So.
Right.
So over, I think they're for everyone.
Over and over.
Exactly. So in my opinion, I think they're for everyone.
It is funny how kids love to hear the same stories over and over again.
I know. That's one of my favorite phrases from when my kids were little. Is the, you know, do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I just, yeah, so you know you have a winner when they ask for it 20 times in a row.
Yes, yeah, for sure, for sure. So it's interesting to me that all four of your books, it sounds like, are coming out from different publishers. Is that unusual?
I don't know. Because I'm so new to this that, you know, I think I really believe that just like not every book is right for every reader, because, you know, people have preferences and what kinds of books they like, you have to find the publisher that is right for your book. So, and I think because I didn't start with one book and then kind of wait and then only submit books to a particular publisher, we kind of had a lot of things ready at the very beginning, so we kind of, you know, got to shop the books around to different publishers, and so I ended up with, I really feel like so far, you know, in terms of the process, I feel like they've been the perfect publishers for each project, so mm-hmm. I'm really happy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
With picture books, how involved are you in the production, you know, the illustrating and so forth? Do you have any say in it or not much?
So I will tell you what I know so far. So I've been very fortunate in that all the publishers that I've worked with for my picture books have solicited my opinions on illustrators before the illustrators were chosen, and which I think is pretty unusual. So I feel really fortunate. And the people who the artists, you know, who will be illustrating these three picture books that I just mentioned are incredibly talented, and I'm so excited to work with them. In terms of the actual kind of commenting on the illustrations, I'm, you know, only partway into the process of the first picture book, so I don't know everything yet. But so far I've seen character sketches and gotten to make comments on that. And, of course, the editor of the book and the art director of the book also make comments. So I think that I think I'm going to be seeing more art in about a month or so. So I'm really excited because I'll see scene sketches then, I think. So, yeah, I've been really fortunate, I think, in that I get a lot of
a lot of
have input into the illustrations. Yeah, yeah.
Did you have ideas of of what you thought, you know, as you were writing, did you have pictures in your mind of what the illustrations for a particular part might consist of?
You know, honestly, not really. I tried not to. For me, the story kind of spun out in like a little movie in my head, but I wasn't married to what it, you know, what I envisioned. And I think it's good that I'm not that visual, because it's, that means that whatever the illustrator comes up with is going to be so much better than anything I could have imagined. So I think it's good.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Rajini LaRocca, and she's the author of Midsummer's Mayhem. So, Mom, do you want to, let's talk a little bit about Midsummer's Mayhem and Shakespeare, which I know you have some knowledge teaching Shakespeare.
Some knowledge of it. But, you know, I was just thinking, you know, I started out my teaching career as an aide the class was for slow readers in high school, for slow readers, and we had a lot of books that were high interest, low vocabulary, and I was just thinking some of these picture books might be really tremendous as a tool in that, you know, because we have pictures besides the words, it adds so much to it. And
absolutely. If anybody's not confident in their reading, it provides a kind of a pathway into reading, because the pictures draw your interest, that can help you understand. Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if they still have that program or not, because I haven't been there for quite a few years, but it was a good experience for me to start, and I met some interesting kids, and I'm proud to say that we raised They raised their grade level reading skills almost four grades by the time they were through with the years. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was really good, for them. Okay, so this story, of course, Midsummer is supposed to be a time of craziness, kind of, in Shakespeare's thing, and this is a crazy thing. But you know,
there's a lot of crazy things going on, for sure.
Yeah, but what I really liked was that this young lady, when she baked, she used plants and flowers and things in her baking. I thought that was amazing. Do you know a lot about baking?
I think over the years, just through practice, you know, normally when I bake, I follow a recipe exactly, but I got to experiment for the recipes of this book, and I had so much fun. That meant a lot of failed experiments where it was like, oh, that's not tasty, but or that didn't really rise very much. But I think that's a good metaphor for writing and for life.
So Midsummer's Mayhem is, let's see, how can I describe it? How do you describe it in a few words? What do you, like in one paragraph?
I describe it as an Indian American mashup of A Midsummer Night's Dream and Cupcake Wars.
Perfect. That's perfect.
Very good, yes.
What gave you the idea of incorporating this sort of modern take on Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream into a book for middle grade readers?
Yes. So let me tell you a little bit about how this story came to be. So when I was a kid, my dad didn't travel very often, but when he did, he was sometimes gone for up to a week. And I, being a child with an overactive imagination, wondered when he came home, how would I know if the person who came home wasn't actually my dad, but was some like other person that looked exactly like him. So I made up a series of like quiz questions, basically, to kind of, you know, make sure that, you know, only my dad would know the answers to these questions. And, you know, luckily it was always him. But when it came time to write a novel, I thought to myself, that memory came back to me, and I was like, well, what if there was a family in which the dad came home from a trip, and there was something wrong with him, and, you know, this girl was the only one who noticed? And so it kind of grew from there, and so I was like, okay, well, under what circumstances would, you know, the girl be the only one who noticed? And I said, oh, I know. It's a big family. They got a lot going on. There's, you know, she's the youngest one, and she's, you know, she's kind of doing her thing, and all her siblings kind of steal all the spotlight. And then another idea I had was, you know, what if somebody had an imaginary friend who ended up not being imaginary, but who was actually real, but was somehow supernatural? And so then I thought about it, and I was, you know, I live in Concord, Massachusetts, which has beautiful conservation areas, you know, woods and beautiful trees and things like that. And I was like, well, oh, you know, magical people in the woods, that's got to be fairies. And then I remembered my love of Shakespeare and this play in particular, Midsummer Night's Dream. And there is actually a line from the play that relates directly to the family in my book. And once I remember that line, that was it. It all fell into place. I was like, now I know what happens. So this is kind of like a continuation of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Like, what if that had actually happened? What would happen next, kind of thing?
Oh, boy. Well, it was a page-turner, I got to admit. It was. Because you just wanted to know what was going to come next. I mean, there were so many things going on. You just, you know, it was good. I enjoyed it. I really did.
And it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was. So,
thank you.
So Mimi, who's the main character, the 11-year-old, she's entering this baking contest, and she's trying, and so it's just even before that happens, there's a lot of references to food, and I really enjoyed kind of the descriptions of things in terms of taste. Even I think sometimes things that weren't edible.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't food, but you were describing them in the book in terms of taste. Is that something that you do? Do you think in terms of flavor?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think I like to do kind of exercises in my mind where I think in terms of flavor. And when I wrote this book, I really tried to channel the idea of food, of taste and smell and all the senses that are associated with food, because that was the perspective of my main character, that she was obsessed. I mean, she is obsessed with food, right? She just loves it much.
Yeah.
And so she thinks about everything in terms of food. And so all of her descriptions and all the metaphors she uses are all food related.
Yeah. And when she bakes things, everybody, you know, that's kind of her talent, but it seems to be a lesser talent to her than her siblings' talents at the beginning.
Yes. I think that this is, you know, I think this is true of most people, that the things that we're good at, we tend to discount, and the things that everyone else is good at, we tend to, you know, raise up to great heights. And so, and I also think that, you know, I've seen this with my own children. I think that younger children sometimes look at siblings who are much older than them and think, well, I can't do that. And, you know, when the real truth is they can't do that now, it doesn't mean that they're never going to be able to do that. So, she discounts what she's able to do because she just thinks, you know, that's just like my siblings and my parents think I'm good. Like, have I ever really proven that to anybody else? Where she feels like all her siblings have become kind of famous in their town for their various talents.
So talk a little bit about how you incorporated aspects of Midsummer Night's Dream into the story.
Yes. So first I would say that, you know, my overall goal was to channel the kind of spirit of fun and whimsy and kind of madcap adventure that is in that play, and have that spirit kind of infuse my novel. The second thing I would say is that the setting is really important. So in Shakespeare's play, the kind of two settings are the city of Athens, which is kind of the regular world in which, King Theseus and Queen Hippolyta are about to get married, and Hermia is kind of against her dad's choice for the man she's supposed to marry. And then the other part of the setting is the magical woods, some distance mm-hmm. from Athens. We're not sure where they are. And that's where all the fairies, live, and they, engage in kind of crazy antics that really mess up the lives of regular people. So similarly, in Midsummer's Mayhem, they're kind of two settings, and one is the charming New England town of Comedy, which is a thinly veiled depiction of my own hometown of Concord, Massachusetts, home of famous people, literary people, and then the magical woods behind Mimi's house, where she meets very interesting people and finds herbs and flowers to bake with. So I tried to parallel that as well. And then, the other thing that we don't often think about with the Midsummer Night's Dream, but it's true, is that, it's a play that deals with a lot of conflict. It deals with conflict between the king and the queen of the fairies. It deals with conflict between two friends who used to be like sisters but now are fighting over a man, and between a daughter and her father. And similarly, there's a decent amount of conflict in Midsummer's Mayhem, and some of which is caused by Mimi inadvertently. There are a lot of people arguing with each other and striving against each other, and I tried to make that part of the play as well. But ultimately, the book is about kind of finding your place in your own family and mm-hmm. kind of recognizing what's most important to you.
Right.
Well, it's kind of funny. I'm right now just coincidentally start listening to a book on tape on Audible, Circe. Which is about someone else who uses herbs and to have effects, and it's about Greek gods and goddesses and so forth. And so when I'm listening to that, I'm thinking about this too and the similarities.
Oh wow! Well, yeah. I'm completely flattered.
Have you read that book?
Not yet, but it is right at the top of my pile. I'm so excited to read it.
It's amazing. It is so good. It is so good. Yeah. And it's funny that even after all these years, centuries, we still have interest. These mythological stories still draw us in. And in fact, we had an author we interviewed a couple weeks ago, Julia Berry, who wrote Lovely War, which was a World War I love story centered mm-hmm. into a framed by the story of the goddess of love, and why is her name
Aphrodite
and mm-hmm. and her affair with Ares and getting caught by her husband, and so there's that story framing it. So this seems
to be my goodness.
Interesting. It was
I know that author, and I have to read her book. I've read every single one of her books, but that one I still have to read. Yes.
Yeah, it may not be out yet. I think it's just coming out now.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's really great. Now, Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare's play, mm-hmm. is a play within a play.
Yes.
And you have some aspect of that here, too.
Yes. Mimi's older brother, Henry, is a part of a community theater a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream in the book. And I knew from the very beginning that I was going to do that because I figured that most of the young readers and possibly a lot of the, adult readers of this book wouldn't be familiar with the play. So I wanted a way to introduce the play and kind of the most important features of the play that are paralleled in this book in an easy way and in an entertaining way.
Yeah, I wonder,
so that's fun. And
if you're not familiar with Shakespeare's play, are there things do you think a reader would miss, or do you think you were able to, it's hard for me to say because I am familiar with it. So when I see the parallels I recognized Puck very, before The Secret's Out. And
right.
And but so I wonder if it's more fun to read if you do have that familiarity.
Well, based on what readers have told me, people have said that even people who don't know anything about the play have enjoyed the book because enough of the play is kind of explained and referenced in the book that it's fun. But, oh, people who are familiar with the play, there are all kinds of Easter eggs and all kinds of funny quotes and stuff coming out of, you know, left field that you're like, oh, wow, okay, that's so funny. So, you know, I think it's like super fun if you know the play, but right. It doesn't, I mean, but it's also fun if you don't know the play. And I'm hoping, and I think this is true for some young readers who didn't know the play before they read the book and then enjoyed the book and are like, maybe I should read the play, or maybe even better, I should see the play performed, which I think is like, you know, the best introduction to Shakespeare for young people and for any people, actually.
Particularly if it's a professional performance, because
yes.
The first time that I saw real professional performance of Shakespeare, it was a British, the Royal Shakespeare Company on tour. And so they were here in the States. And the difference in that versus, you know, your community, theater production, not to take anything away from community theater, and they can do wonderful productions. But the difference when it's an actual Shakespeare, trained Shakespeare actor, you understand so much more of the words, which can be kind of hard. You know, the text mm-hmm. can be kind of hard to grasp when it's going by really fast in a play, but it carries so much context when it's really, really well done that I feel like you can grasp a lot more of it.
Yeah, we've seen some pretty amazing productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream. It is, it's so much fun to watch performed. And one of them was out at Shakespeare and Company, which is in Western Massachusetts. Mm. And it was done outside on a summer night and next to the woods. So the fairies were literally swinging onto stage from the woods. And you believed it. You believed that they were actually fairies. It was amazing. It really was amazing.
Wow. Is this your favorite Shakespeare play?
It is my favorite. I have a really close runner-up, though.
And which one's that?
It's Much Ado About Nothing. I love that play so much. Oh, my goodness. Yes. So that's really close. And then my third favorite would be The Tempest.
Mm.
Yeah.
How about
you,
Mom?
Two with...
Do you have a favorite?
Me?
Yeah, you.
No, I don't really. I'll tell you, there were so many, and, you know, trying to teach them to high school kids, it wasn't as much fun because, you know, they were fighting me every way they could. But it was, you know, it was, I don't know. That was back in the day. Yeah. I have to let it go.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Rajini LaRocca, author of Midsummer's Mayhem. And I interrupted you. You were going to say of your three favorites, two of them were?
Oh, two of them have a supernatural aspect to them, and one of them does not.
Okay. It's funny.
Yeah.
In Shakespeare's comedies,
mm-hmm.
There's always seems to be, you know, I used to go to the Shakespeare Festival in Iowa City every summer, and it's like there's always a prince or a duke. There's always mistaken identities. There's
mm-hmm.
often gender bending.
Yes.
And there's always a fool or a jester who's really the wise one. And
right.
And there's often a storm.
mm-hmm. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shipwreck, storms,
yes.
Twins.
Twins, yes, that's the other one. A lot of twins, which lead to the mistaken identities.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think my favorite Shakespeare play is Othello, which is obviously much more serious. And but that's because that's the one that I first saw performed professionally. And so it really, really stuck with me. But I have been to, I've seen Macbeth performed at the Globe Theater in London.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And that was pretty cool.
My husband and I spent 2 weeks in England for our honeymoon, and we saw 4 Shakespeare plays.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
Yeah, we saw 2 in London and 2 in Stratford-upon-Avon. It was really wonderful. Yeah, so we've got kind of Shakespeare on the brain in our house for the most part.
So were you so familiar with the play that as you were writing, I mean, did you still have to look things up a lot? Did you like sit down and read it again before you started writing? Tell me how you researched it.
Yeah, so I did read it again before I started writing, and then I constantly referenced. I constantly went back to it to try and find the quotes that I needed and for reference purposes, and it was just. Every time I looked at it, it was really fun. And then when I worked with my editor, he actually suggested some extra enhancement with Shakespearean language of one of the scenes. And it was brilliant. I was like, wow, I can't believe after all the time I worked on this, like you came up with this brilliant idea that's even better. So it was really fun. Yeah. We had a ball. And the language is so much fun. It's just a ton of fun.
Well, Rajini, why don't you read us a little bit from Midsummer's Mayhem?
Sure. So I'll read you the opening, and then I will read a little bit from the second chapter when Mimi meets some interesting people.
Great.
So here's the opening. Chapter 1, The New Neighbors. The song from the woods first called to me on a bright June morning while I sat on the back porch swing rereading my favorite cookbook. I could only hear a few notes, a small taste of a half-remembered melody that meandered through the air, but I was instantly hungry to hear the whole thing and discover where it came from. I crossed the yard and stopped at the edge of the woods. As the music drifted toward me like an irresistible aroma, I held my breath and stepped into the trees. "Hey, Mimi!" My big sister Jules's voice yanked me back to reality. I spun around. She was dribbling a soccer ball, of course. She leapt over the ball and ran to me. "I need your help." I push my hair out of my eyes. That's the kind of hair I have, the kind that's always in my face. Did you hear that? I asked, sure I could still hear lingering notes in the summer air. Jules grabbed my arm and pulled me toward the porch. She pointed at the driveway next door, where a moving van and a silver car were parked. "The new neighbors are here. Let's bring them those brownies you baked this morning." "But those are for Dad." "Welcome home, brownies, since he'd been gone all week." "Make him something else. Come on, don't let them see us yet." But a tall teenage boy with shaggy brown hair was carrying boxes into what used to be my best friend Emma's house. So that was why Jules wanted to go next door. "He's cute, huh?" Jules said. I shrugged. He looked around Jules's age, 15 or 16. "I want to make a good first impression. Bring the brownies, and whatever you do, don't tell Rhea." Our sister Rhea is a year older than Jules and 5 years older than me. She's like an Aleppo pepper, striking and fragrant, but with a substantial kick. We reached the back porch, and Jules pulled her dark hair out of its ponytail. "I'll be down in a minute." She sprinted inside and bounded up the stairs. I turned to the woods and listened again. Nothing. I missed the song already. Where had it come from? It had been a single, fluid line of melody, repetitive, insistent. It might have been a bird, but had an elusive quality that made me wonder. And why did it sound so familiar? I couldn't care less about the new neighbors. I wanted to turn right back around and head into the woods like I used to do with Emma. She loved quests. If only she still lived next door. But Jules was going to take my brownies over there whether I liked it or not, so I figured I should at least make sure they were presented attractively. I grabbed my cookbook off the porch swing and went into the kitchen. As I cut the brownies and put them on my favorite purple platter, I couldn't help smiling at the scent of chocolate and cinnamon. These were supposed to be for Dad, who loved chocolate. Who didn't? But would particularly appreciate the warm spices I'd put into them. I even added a dash of cayenne for extra zing. "How now, spirit? Whither wander you?" My brother Henry made a beeline for the brownies. I blocked his arm before he could grab one, and he recoiled dramatically. He was constantly reciting lines from the latest play he was performing in and barely spoke normal English anymore. "None for you, Shakespeare," I said. "Not unless you come next door with us. We're taking them to the new neighbors." Henry bowed deeply. "Fear not, my lord. Your servant shall do so." He took a pitcher of lemonade from the fridge and poured a glass. "What's going on?" said Rhea. I hadn't heard her come into the room, but then being light on her feet was one of the things that made Rhea such a great dancer. She looked up from her phone just long enough to scrutinize me with hawk-like eyes. "Oh, nothing," I said nonchalantly. Jules would kill me if Rhea found out our plan and tried to tag along with us. Every boy Jules likes seemed to become obsessed with Rhea instead. "We're saying hi to the new neighbors," said Henry. "I'm going for Mamie's fantastic brownies." "How remarkably boring," said Rhea with a smile. She turned back to her phone. Oh, that was a close call. I let out a relieved breath and finished arranging the brownies. Bits of the song from the woods played in my mind. It tugged at me like a secret waiting around the corner. Jules barreled back into the room. "Ready, Mimi?" Her hair was in a ponytail as always, but it was neater than usual, and her lips glistened. She stopped short. "What's everyone doing in here?" Rhea sized up Jules. "We've been waiting for you. We all want to meet our new friends next door, don't we?" Jules glared at me and mouthed, "Thanks." I was about to explain that it wasn't my fault, but Jules had already grabbed the platter and stormed out the door.
See what I mean by page turner? See what I mean?
Yeah, and what's really so cool is you've introduced all four siblings in like four pages, and we've gotten a really clear image of each of them. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. And now you're going to read from chapter two?
Yes. So I'll just fill you in a little bit on what happened. So that platter of brownies was not long for the world. Like, they ate a few of them, and then Mimi accidentally kicks a soccer ball into them, and the whole platter shatters. So she has nothing to give her dad. She decides to bike into town, into their little town, to a new cafe called the While Away Cafe and see what they have and see if she can buy something for her dad. So I will read a little excerpt from that. So she goes into the While Away Cafe, and this is what she finds. The cafe was beautiful inside, decorated in pale greens with clusters of wooden tables, mismatched chairs, and vases bursting with fresh wildflowers. Soft, dreamy music played overhead, and the faint scent of tree pollen and grass wafted through the air. It felt like being in the woods. The place was empty. There wasn't even anyone behind the counter. A bright pink poster near the door caught my eye. "Attention bakers ages 8 through 13. Enter the While Away Cafe Midsummer Baking Contest. First round, bring in your best baked goods to earn a golden leaf. Second round, the golden leaf winners will bring in more baked goods to be judged and will be narrowed down to 3. Third round, a live bake-off on Midsummer's Eve. Your delectable delights could win you enchanting prizes." A wave of warmth trickled through me like melted butter. A baking contest in comedy. "A heartfelt welcome to the While Away," came a nearby voice. Startled, I turned to find a curly-haired waitress right next to me. "How may I help you have the sweetest day?" she asked. My excitement about the contest had made me forget what I was doing. I spotted the display case at the opposite end of the room. "Can I look at your pastries?" I asked. The waitress curtsied, flopping her brown curls forward, and indicated the way. She wore a wild skirt made of fresh green leaves and bright pink flowers. A variety of tempting treats filled the pastry case. There were pies, cookies, brownies, tarts, and my favorite, cupcakes. Each cake was beautifully decorated with perfectly piped frosting, swirls and rosettes, leaves, and miniature flowers. I decided to get two different cupcakes and give Dad a choice when he got home. "I'd like one of the chocolate cupcakes, please, and that purple one with all the flowers." "Oh, yes, and will you have a drink, my dear?" Her accent was slightly odd, but I liked it. "Just the cupcakes, thanks." She put them on a plate and led me to the back of the store. "Come sit you down, then, at this table here." I hadn't planned on staying, but I felt bad leaving the waitress to a completely empty cafe, so I followed her. I could sample each cupcake, decide which was best, and buy another for Dad. I sat at a table where I could see out the back windows to a small footbridge that went over to the river to the woods. It was only a couple of miles through there to my house. The waitress made no move to leave and sort of hovered near my elbow. I sniffed the chocolate cupcake. It smelled rich, and it looked inviting, with a dark swirl of frosting on top, right up Dad's alley. I peeled back the paper wrapping and took a bite while the waitress watched my face. To my surprise, the cake itself tasted like cocoa-flavored cardboard, and the frosting was too sweet with an oily texture. I put the cupcake back on the plate and forced myself to smile. "Your face is quite a sight," the waitress said, twisting her hands. "It's awful, am I right?" I looked at her. She seemed barely older than Rhea, with big blue eyes and a small pink flower pinned to her hair. "I'm sorry," I said. "It's a tad dry, but let me try the other one." I quickly unpeeled the pretty purple cupcake and took a bite, which I regretted immediately. This cake was too moist, soggy, and falling apart like someone had soaked it in juice. The frosting, lovely as it looked, tasted like a sugary version of the papier-mâché paste that Jules had once tricked me into tasting when I was 6, telling me it was mashed potatoes. This time I couldn't hide how disgusting it was and had to spit it out. "Is this supposed to be a grape cupcake?" "That's right. Oh, dear, she'll be so angry now." The waitress gave me a sheepish look. "It's not for lack of trying, but know-how." "You baked these?" "Yes, and no one likes them, don't you see? The owner was so very cross with me." It seemed unfair to put this girl in charge and then be angry with her, since it was obvious she knew nothing about baking. "Isn't there anyone who can help you?" She flared her nostrils. "The one who knows the most won't lift a hand. We struggle every day, you understand?" Wait a second. Was she rhyming? "We try, and though we all must play the part," she leaned toward me and whispered, "we have no clue of how to even start." "Why don't you get a good book on baking? I can recommend a few I love," I said. "Perhaps," she leaned toward me again. "You seem to know an awful lot. Could you perchance assist us with our plot?" "But I'm not..." "Oh, that would be so lovely. You're a dear. I'll go speak with the owner. Just wait here." She started toward the counter. But she looked back at me pathetically. "Please tell me that you'll help us. 'Twould be awesome." I sighed. "What's your name?" "Peas Blossom." She dipped a small curtsy. What kind of parents saddled their kid with that name?
And, of course, if you know the play, I think when was it? Sometime when it was grade school, junior high, long, long time ago, we did a version of Midsummer Night's Dream, and I think I might have played Peas Bottom, or else... Is there one named Moth or something?
Yes, yes. Okay. There's Moth, there's Cobweb, there's Mustard Seed, and Peas Blossom. Yeah.
Well, I was one of them.
Oh, wonderful. You were a fairy. I love it.
I was a fairy, yep. And I was about as awkward as she is.
Poor Peas Blossom. She's in over her head.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I notice on your website that there's a little thing here. Want to plan a Midsummer's Mayhem baking event?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can download any Midsummer's Mayhem baking event kit. So what is that?
Yes. So I worked with Curious City, which does kind of really fun things with authors and books. Kirsten Cappy is the name of the person there. And we cooked up like an activity guide for anybody who wants to do a baking-themed Midsummer's Mayhem event. So it's full of little riddles that can be used as the clues for what people should use in their baked items. And all the recipes from the book. So I think I have 9 recipes of things that I came up with while I was writing this book. And I made them up, and I tried them out in my own kitchen, and they work. So fun things, everything from the cinnamon cayenne brownies that I mentioned in the first chapter to some rose cardamom cupcakes that come later in the book, and chocolate chunk cookies with thyme and citrus, which also comes later in the book, and lots of others as well. And then there are little certificates for kind of quote-unquote prizes. So there are lots and lots of certificates that lots of kids or adults could earn for participating in the baking contest.
How fun.
We had just a ton of fun. Yeah.
Do you know if any groups have done this yet?
I don't know yet, but I do know in September, September 15th, I'm going to be at a local bookstore near me in Belmont, Massachusetts, and we're going to be having a kids' baking contest that day, and I'm hoping that some of this, will be used for that. So that should be a lot of fun.
Now, I also notice on your website that you have like presentations for schools, and I know that schools loved having author visits. And have you done any of those yet? Probably not, because this got published after school was out and school hasn't started back yet. But
I actually did. I did a school presentation in May at a local school in Massachusetts before the book was out. But it was really fun. It was it was a writing kind of workshop for seventh graders, and we. I kind of told them about my path to publication, and then we did some writing exercises on using all five senses in writing, with an example being the first paragraph of Midsummer's Mayhem kind of before revision and after revision, kind of adding all the sensory detail that I could. And that was really fun. And then I just came back from a trip to the West Coast. I was at Nerd Camp Southern California, and they had a Camp Nerdling the day before Nerd Camp. So Nerd Camp is an education camp model, but it includes teachers and authors. So the day before that, they had a Camp Nerdling that was all children. So they had students come in, and we had groups of kids coming around, and we did presentations for them. So I did some presentations for them as well, and it was so much fun.
Oh, I bet. And it looks like you have three different versions of the writing workshops that you offer for kids.
Yes. Yeah, so one of them is kind of for larger assemblies, and it's more kind of talking about how I got to be where I am now, and the others are more kind of hands-on, nitty-gritty, let's spend a few minutes writing together kind of things.
I like the one called Magical Revision. You want to tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, I take kids through, so to me, I remember being a kid and wishing that, like, once you wrote something once, you could just, like, that's it. It would be perfect. And as we all know, that's just not the way it works. So for me, revision is where all the magic happens. So I talk about kind of the things that I look for when I revise, and oftentimes I will go sweep through a certain section of the book, and I'll look for, characterization and plot and making sure the plot makes sense and theme. And, that's actually one of my favorite parts of revision, is thinking about what the overall theme of the book is and how to insert it into subtly into places before the ending, so that when you get to the ending, it's satisfying. So yeah, I talk about those kinds of things. Yeah, it's fun.
Oh golly.
Mom, did you ever have any authors come visit class when you were teaching English?
No, unfortunately, I didn't have that opportunity. I wish I had.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah.
I never had it either when I was a student.
Yeah, I don't think I did either.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just such an exciting idea. And I will tell you, as an author, there's nothing as exciting as connecting with, kid readers. They're fun. Yeah, one of the events I just did in California was at a bookstore, and they had a middle grade book club, full of kids, and half of them had already read the book. So I got amazing questions. It was just so incredible to hear from kids who'd actually read it and enjoyed it. It was completely overwhelming and lovely.
So, Rajini, tell us a little bit about your writing process. Do you set aside a certain amount of time every day? Do you have a certain place where you write? Do you write on computer or paper first? And do you write fast and then go back and edit, or do you edit as you go?
Oh, these are such great questions. So, as a mother and as a working mom, you probably know that, like, my routine was really kind of wrapped around my work schedule and my children's schedule for a long time. And so as a result, it made me a very flexible writer in terms of where I could write and when I wrote. So basically, I wrote whenever I had time. Like I would write, you know, if I in the, you know, hour between when you know, when I got home and when the kids showed up, I would write then. I would write after dinner. I would write, you know, sometimes on my phone in the line, in the car line waiting to pick them up. I would go to a piano lesson with my laptop and just write a few things down. Yeah, so I pretty much I've written almost everywhere. Yeah, and, you know, now my children are older, so, like, you know, now after dinner they have to go up and do homework, so, you know, I've got a lot of time to myself, and my husband is often working, too, so I have more time, you know, to myself now. But, yeah, so I was flexible. I do like writing. I do like typing because my handwriting is atrocious. I think that's from years of being a doctor. And,
it goes with the territory. Yeah.
I know it's terrible. There are times when I will have written something and I'm like, I can't read this. This is really disturbing. Like I wrote it. How is it that I can't read it?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I like to type things. I like to type things up. And in terms of, so I do, my writing process is iterative. So I do write a draft and then I, before I go on to the next piece, like I will go back and look at that, you know, chapter and kind of revise or edit it a little bit. But there are times when I think when things are going well and going easily and then you don't want to stop yourself. So I just kind of keep going forward. But yeah, I'm one of those people that I do go back and revise a little bit even as I work forward on a first draft. And for me, the first draft is the hardest. I find it very difficult to just get it all down, even when I know what needs to happen sometimes. But once I have it down, I love revision. So that's why it's magical. It's magical to me. It's very good.
how many drafts do you do?
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know if I can count. Well, I mean, that for my first book, I guess what I would say is for my first book was the book that actually taught me how to, you know, how to write a novel. So, you know, it's, I don't know if that's fair. So I wrote many, many, many versions of this book.
Right.
But you know, I think I don't know. And I believe that every book is different. So, we will see. But I mean, I would say there were at least three major versions of this book. And then maybe a fourth before it actually got acquired as a book. So yeah, so there were a lot. And then there were so many micro revisions in, you know, during that time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time, but one last question. Are you writing another novel?
I am. I am working on a companion novel to Midsummer's Mayhem.
Ooh.
And I'm hoping it will be published one day. But the idea is that it's set in the same town with different characters. So, yeah.
And, is there a Shakespearean element to it as well?
There is, but I'm not going to say anything about that yet. But yes, there is. There definitely is.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And, Mom, do you have some final words?
I do. This is directed at this delightful author. If possible in life, do what you love and love what you do.
Well, I think Rajani's got that one down.
I think so too.
Thanks so much for being with us and see you all next week on Writer's Voices.
Bye now.
Bye. Thank you.